Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of Too Much Tully. Today, we're talking all things fertility. Jess and I have a million questions, and we're sure you guys do too. So thankfully, joining us later in the show, we have Dr. Sarah Matthews from Repromed, who is a fertility expert and clinician. I, for one, have baby fever, so I am shaking in my knitted booties to learn about how I can start my small football team of children. Jess, you've got your wine. Oh, actually, if we're talking about babies, maybe we shouldn't drink this episode. Nah, yeah. Fuck it. I got my wine. Let's get into it. So, Tully, I have a huge bone to pick with you.
Go on, Jessica.
And also, pun intended, this is about dogs.
Is it?
Yes.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Interesting, because last week you popped up on the Too Much Tully Instagram a comparison between, was it a Cavalier and my favorite dogs in the entire world, Whippets?
Well, it was off the back of the episode, right? So we touched on a bunch of different questions, big and small. One of your questions, because you thought that the kind of dog a person wanted said a lot about who they were as a person. And I said that I've always loved King Charles Cavaliers. And you said that you loved Whippets, which I think are just untrustworthy little snaky dogs.
I know, but you didn't even give it the time of day. You chose the ugliest Whippet photo. Did you do that on purpose?
Look, I thought I wanted to hear from the people, you know, I wanted to see what they thought was cuter. I may have found a pretty unattractive photo of a Whippet, and then I may have cheated and gotten a puppy King Charles Cavalier that just so happened to be sitting in a field of daisies. So look, it was maybe an unfair polling exercise. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I that's exactly what I'm saying. It wasn't apples for apples.
So you decided to fill my DMs with 101 photos of different grey Whippets just to prove your point.
Yeah, and because that's the kind of Whippet I want a little charcoal one. But my Whippet Bailey, I also sent you photos of him, and he is the most stunning, gorgeous pup in the entire world. He's no longer with us, so
R.I.P.
Rest in peace, Bailey. But he was the most gorgeous, stunning dog you'll ever come across, and you blatantly said... What did you say? You tell us.
Just not cute. Like, he's just not. He's just not cute.
So, you know,
so funny. You're usually so chill and like borderline monotone. And this is the most passionate I've ever heard you talk about any subject matter ever. So you clearly love Whippets a lot. I'm so sorry. You know what? I'll take it back. I'll take it back. I can't wait for you to get a little Whippet and we can call it. We'll name it as a show maybe.
Yes, that'd be great. We can get your audience to name it for us. Although I do have a few names, but we can leave that for then.
Okay, so Jess, today's episode we've had in the works for quite a while. I think ever since episode one, where we briefly touched on fertility and egg freezing, the feedback we got from that episode was phenomenal. I truly didn't have any idea, you know, how many people listening were also kind of clueless, but interested, but scared about the issue of egg freezing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in your 30s. You're 30. I'm in my 30s. We're both single. It's definitely something that's been on my mind a lot more recently. It actually came up a couple of years ago. I actually went and found the email to read to you guys. So this was sent to me June 27, 2019. So it was really a year ago.
Yeah.
From my manager. And the subject matter said, how's this for a strange one? And I thought, oh God, you know, I get so many weird emails from brands wanting to work with me, from vibrators to all kinds of weird and wonderful collaboration openings. And I remember reading this email. I'll read it to you guys and I'll tell you my reactions. Mm-hmm. So it says, hi, Jen. So a PR agency. Mm-hmm. Hi, Jen. Not a subject you see in your email every day, right? The subject says egg freezing. I wanted to touch base on a very unique program. Do you have a woman in your talent family that might be looking into egg freezing? After listening to Tully's shameless podcast interview, I'd immediately thought she would be great. It's most suited to anyone 29 to 36 who isn't in a long-term committed relationship yet or has just had a big breakup. And then she speaks a little bit about the clinic that she works with, and that says, the idea is to share the journey, mostly via Instagram story content. Anyway, so Jen, my manager, thought it was kind of a funny one. And obviously it's, you know, it's her job to pass it on. I had the weirdest reaction to reading that. I burst into tears.
Interesting. It's one of those things that you don't think about until it's, you know, spoken about by a friend or maybe even our podcast now. It's a little bit shocking and hard to kind of process, I suppose.
I think there was a few reasons why I had that reaction. I was actually at work. I was at my freelance job. So I was like in a public place and I got really teary. I think there were a couple of reasons. I think one is that I didn't think I was at that stage in my life yet. I didn't think I had to start thinking or worrying about freezing my eggs. You know, at the time I would have been 31 and I just thought, oh my God, should I be panicking? Like, should I be worried? Is this something I should be worried about? Then there was the other feeling of like, oh my God, you know, I have been single for a while and maybe this is something I have to be considering. And then I sort of had this mental image play in my head of like my life and how I always saw it panning out and the fact that it wasn't panning out that way. And that was kind of a really like, you know, somber realization that, you know, my Pinterest board of like these weddings and kids and babies and dogs and the perfect, you know, white picket fence, maybe that might not be my reality. I might have to do this on my own. And then there was the third realization that, which is probably more of an ego thing, but the thought that this like PR team was sitting around a desk on a Monday morning, spitballing who they could reach out to. And my name was written on that whiteboard. Like, oh, that girl from Big Brother. I mean, she's been single for about 7 years. She's sad and lonely. She's a spinster. Mm-hmm. She can't get a date. She wants babies. I was like, oh my God, a whole team has sat together and thought that I'd be a great candidate. Like, that is fucking depressing. So I initially was really taken aback and I was kind of tell them no thanks, thanks but no thanks, not wouldn't be interested in it. I also was concerned that it was maybe too personal a journey and maybe not the kind of content that I should be sharing on my social media channel. Mm-hmm. I think for most of the time, you know, me doing what I do on social media, it's fun and it's light and it's bubbly. Obviously I use it for stuff that are important to me to talk about, you know, matters like mental health, anxiety, dementia. I definitely use it for that, but I don't know. I just feel like fertility and going through that kind of an experience and journey is just such a personal matter. And the thought of having to like share it via Instagram just initially didn't sit very well with me.
And how do you feel about it now? Do you think that you've changed a little bit?
Do you know what? I actually think it was that very email that planted a seed in my head. It planted a seed about egg freezing and it's kind of been something that's been coming up more and more since then. I think, you know, with the global pandemic, it's been a really weird year. I think it's made a lot of people stop and reassess where they are in their life. It's made people stop and assess what's important to them, what's not important to them. You know, what from their old life they want to go back to, what they can live without, you know, what they want to spend their focus on moving forward. I don't know about you, but I've definitely had a lot of reassessing in terms of what's important to me. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely been on my mind. It's definitely been on my mind. And I think my housemate, Peter, who I live with, she's frozen her eggs and she has nothing but amazing, great things to say about the whole experience and the whole journey. I don't know. How do you feel about it? Have you considered it before?
So a really close friend of mine did it this year and this was probably my email moment that you had of actually even thinking about it. Like I didn't consider it to be maybe something for me as a straight person. But then in hindsight, when you look into it a little bit more, you know, I'm single, I might not find a partner in the next, you know, 5 years or whatever it is. And then I might be getting on and my egg count might be going down. So these are all things that I didn't even consider that I would need to have. And since then, yeah, I have considered it. Whether I would want to use them alone down the track is a different question. But yeah, it's definitely something I think I want to do in the next few years just to make sure that, you know, family is such a huge part of my life now and I want that for myself.
Yeah, well, we both said, you know, in last week's episode, we both said that a long-term goal of ours was to have a family. I think we both want children. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely something that I've never imagined my life without kids in it. And so I guess now, you know, it would be silly to not at least look into my options. And I guess egg freezing is definitely one of them. Mm-hmm. Do you think that if you were to do it, do you think it would give you peace of mind?
Yeah, I think so. Because as I just said, I think with the, you know, in 5 years' time, if I looked back and, you know, I still didn't have a partner, I think that's when I would start having the conversation with myself as to whether I would do it alone and whether I would actually pursue that. I think at this stage in my life, I'd want to just have it there for that sense of security, I suppose. But yeah, it just opens up conversations down the track that you might want to have.
I guess once you freeze your eggs, then you then have a couple of different options, right? So you can freeze your eggs and then say in 2, 3, 5 years, 10 years time, you can say, okay, So either you've found a partner and you're like, great, cool. I've got some like super fresh and young and eggs, you know, were frozen in time. Mm-hmm. Great. That probably, you know, makes it easier. We're going to find out all about this in a minute with a expert. But so you've got that option. Then I guess you've got the option of, okay, cool. I haven't met anybody, but I still definitely want kids. Do I now do this alone and become, you know, a single mom? Or there's also co-parenting, obviously. Now, this is another option that I would never have taken seriously before this year. I kind of would have always like, I mean, you make those deals, right? You make those deals at like high school or university with guy friends or best friends where you're like, you know, if we're both still, I love how it was always like, if we're both still single at 30, we should just get married.
I know.
Right?
I had a few of those.
Oh my God, I had a few as well. I think
And then they all got taken.
No, I mean, I was hedging my bets. I was sneaky. Like I made a few different sneaky packs and like nice. Made them feel like they were the only one I was had it with. But now it's like, okay, if we're still single at 40, then we'll get married. But yeah, I mentioned it again in episode one of Too Much Tully, but my dear friend James, who I've known for about 10 years now, he's 35. He's sort of always single. I'm always single. And yeah, we had a few vinos one night at dinner and he kind of brought it up, but I thought he was joking. And then we kind of went along with this sort of imaginary life we could have together. And the more we spoke about it, the more I was like, I could do that. Like I've always been, it's so funny because I think if you know me or if you, you know me from the podcast or from Instagram, you think, oh God, she's a bit out there. You know, I mean, this podcast is called Too Much Tully. I've done a lot of weird and crazy things over the years. I've dated women. I went on Big Brother. Mm. You know, I don't seem to really follow any kind of rule book or guidelines, but I'm weirdly traditional about a lot of things. It's bizarre. And yeah, I always just imagine me, you know, getting married, then having the kids. And now I'm like, I probably could totally bring up a kid with you, with my friend James, or with some other amazing guy in my life. Mm-hmm. Would you ever consider that? Do you have anyone in your life right now that you could imagine doing that with?
I've got a really close gay best friend, and I feel like I could do that with him because he is an absolute legend. I could imagine that he would be an amazing dad, and I think that would be a really nice partnership. I'm still kind of, I have my mind set on finding the one and mm-hmm. Having, you know, babies as a family unit. But I mean, it doesn't mean that I'm, you know, not open to it down the track because I definitely want that in my life. So I'm not going to say no, but it's in the moment, no.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Okay.
There is no wrong answer. There is no wrong answer. Okay. So before we get the expert in the field on the mm-hmm. podcast, I don't know about you, but like, I think there are so many common misconceptions and myths about egg freezing. What are some of the ones, like, what are some of your biggest fears?
Biggest fears is that you go through the process and then your eggs are mistaken for someone else's or given away.
What kind of crime shows have you been watching? Is that really what your biggest...
The freezer just shuts down. I don't, like, where are they? Like, I don't know. This is what I want to find out.
Oh my God, wait. My fears are so different. Okay, wait,
what are
on.
Yours?
You think that your eggs are going to get mixed up in the lab or something?
Yes.
I mean, I guess that's a, yeah. And so what was, that we have like a statewide like blackout and the freezer dies for a few hours and your eggs die.
The eggs are gone. Because it is a process.
For sure. Okay. No, my fears are more stuff like, you know, I want to know, you know, how old is too old? You know, I feel like I've been told that as soon as you hit 30, your eggs start dying by some ridiculous percentage every year. Like, am I already too old? What are the possibilities of, you know, of having any decent eggs? And then how long can you keep them for? Like, is there a best before date? Is there a use by date? like, what's the deal? And like, mm-hmm. What's the percentage of women that actually come back and use them? What happens to them afterwards? Like, say you get married and you get fall pregnant naturally and you forget all about them. What happens? What happens to them? Can we donate them? Say for instance, I end up with a family of 10, which is what I want, by the way, 10 children.
Jesus, really?
No, I better start now. Well, that was the plan. As I get older, I cut them down. I'd be happy with 5 now. Okay. Do I get, like, say, for instance, I have my own family naturally because I'm, you know, very, very lucky. Can I then pass my eggs to someone who maybe can't have kids? Is there like a reuse, recycle program?
I mean, I hope so. That would be nice.
All right, Jess. So we clearly have a billion trillion questions. I'm sure that everybody who's listening has their own questions. Thank the Lord, baby Jesus. We have an expert in the field joining us. I'm going to fill up my glass. Jess, you fill up yours. And let's get Dr. Sarah Matthews from ReproMed on the line. Dr. Sarah Matthews, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for agreeing to join us today.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I think a lot of women have a moment in their lives, single or otherwise, where their fertility and ability to have children suddenly comes, you know, becomes this niggling thought or even a concern. Firstly, can you give us a bit of background about how long you've been working in this field and what inspired you to become a fertility expert?
So I've been working here at ReproMed for about 15 years. And prior to that, I worked at the Royal Women's in Melbourne and did a dip-obs there and then came back here to Adelaide and have been working here ever since. So some time. And a lot has changed in that period of time.
I'd love to kick off our Q&A with you by getting to know how our eggs work. Like, do they really start to dry up? You know, when should we actually start thinking about collecting our eggs and freezing them? And, you know, is there ever a time where it's too late?
I think women are becoming more and more educated about this, which is really good. But basically, we are born with all the eggs we're ever going to get. So we basically have the most eggs, about 5 to 7 million, when we're actually in our mother's uteruses. And then by the time we're born, we've lost about half of those eggs already.
Oh my God. So we're already up shit creek before we're even born.
Absolutely. It's just men have it much easier because they're constantly being made. Sperm is constantly being made. But with eggs, basically, it starts to deteriorate from the minute go until menopause. But certainly by around about the age of 35, that decline is a lot steeper. And the quality of the eggs really plays a big part there and starts to deteriorate. And that's why getting pregnant beyond 35 is much more difficult, why miscarriage rates are much higher at that age as well. So in terms of when is the best time to get pregnant, obviously biology says the earlier the better. But, women these days have so many other things they want to do pre-baby. And there's, you know, everyone has their own circumstances. But certainly we'd be looking at trying to achieve a pregnancy and certainly freezing eggs before the age of 35.
So if you're going to say the ideal time to freeze your eggs, how old is that?
It's probably where you are about now, Tally.
32. Great. No pressure. Okay. And what do you think, what's the latest age you can freeze your eggs, would you say?
Look, we don't like doing it beyond 38. Certainly, okay. I have done egg freezing beyond that, but I think it really gives a female the wrong sense of security because the success rates beyond that are quite poor. And by the time they then come back and use those eggs, it's then too late to use her own eggs. So we don't like doing it beyond 38. Sometimes we do it much younger too on the other end of the spectrum, but that's usually for medical purposes.
Touching on that, so what kind of women get in touch with you? Like, what are some of their different circumstances? Are they usually single? Are they in relationships? Like, what's kind of like, what range of people do you have coming to you?
So probably the majority are the single educated women who know about this. Yeah, you again. Actually also can afford to do egg freezing. But we have a whole lot of different people in different circumstances. I have, some have seen a lot of patients who have just come out of relationships, and often within the first week of that dissolving, they've lost that relationship and then they realise that they potentially are going to lose the chance to be a parent as well. And so they come in here and feel, you know, this is something that at least they can control, and it gives them that, feeling of less, you know, they haven't lost that as well.
Security.
And they often say it's often better than therapy in that respect for them. They really feel a lot more empowered. But we have lots of different people. I mean, we see a few in the trans community. So women, females that are transitioning to male. And so those trans men can then potentially have children with their own genetics down the track.
That's fascinating. I didn't even think about that being an option. That's amazing.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the medical reasons, people undergoing chemotherapy, radiotherapy for oncology reasons, endometriosis, if you've got that it does seem to speed up the number of eggs lost, and the quality of the eggs isn't as good. So that's often something that can be helpful, you know, to freeze those eggs earlier as well.
What's involved in the process? Like sort of from start to finish, like how many steps are there? How many appointments am I going to need? Like what, is it a long process? Can I get done in a weekend or in a day maybe? Like what am I looking at?
Yeah, look, it's pretty easy process. Basically it involves coming and doing a few tests beforehand. And one of the most important tests we do is this AMH test, which basically is the egg timer test. And this is a blood test. It's a simple blood test. You can have it even if you're on the pill or anything. And it assesses how many sort of eggs proportionally you have compared to somebody else your age, sort of thing. So it gives us a really good idea of where your fertility sits and how long that fertility window is. And once we have that, we can guide women as to which choice, you know, the next sort of step. Now, basically, the most important sort of clinical decision sort of making factor is a woman's age. And certainly, as we've said, if it's, you know, if they are older, then we may be better off discussing different options for them, such as using donor sperm and achieving a pregnancy sort of there and then kind of thing, or freezing embryos, which seem to do a little bit better than eggs. But in terms of the process, it's a couple of bloods, an ultrasound, and then basically we use a medication called FSH, which is a really tiny little injection, which comes in a pen kind of thing, and you can just, if you can go out, you pop it in your handbag and you basically just give yourself a little jab once a day, working with your period. So we start on day two and you continue taking this medication for around about 11 days.
I'm injecting myself every day for 11 days.
Yeah.
It's sweating. You started speaking just then and I was like, oh, it's really hot in here all of a sudden.
It's a subcut little needle and you pinch an inch if you've got an inch to pinch.
Trust me, after lockdown, I've got more than a few inches to pinch.
Well, you'll be fine though. It's pretty simple. A lot of our patients, some of them do have needle phobias and so forth, and they seem to do it absolutely fine.
Will it turn me into a crazy person? Like you see all these movies when people are trying for a baby and they have to inject themselves with stuff and it turns them into like a hormone monster. Am I going to be a crazy hormone monster?
The hormones are produced from the egg. So if you get lots of nice eggs, then you are going to feel a bit premenstrual leading up to, you have got a glass of wine leading up. I'm jealous. I have to work in a minute. Leading up to the egg collection. So it's actually only probably the last few days before the egg collection, which is usually done around about day 12 of your cycle. So it's not a long process. And once you take the eggs out, your hormones drop and you'll be fine. So most people can continue doing their normal work and whatever they're doing. They just come in here early in the morning, they have a blood test and a scan a couple of times and then the egg collection. And that's just done, well, here it's done upstairs. It's under a really light anesthetic. And so you have the day off, but you generally back to work the next day. And then your period comes about 2 weeks later.
So with the egg collection, so I have a light anesthetic, so I'm not conscious for it.
No, you're not conscious. We actually can do it under local anesthetic as well, which is actually a cheaper way if you don't have private health insurance.
And then what, do you get like a little mini vacuum and suck them all out? Like how do you actually retrieve the eggs?
It's a vaginal probe and the probe has a little needle at the end of it.
That sounds like so much fun, Sarah, honestly. Like I just yeah. can't wait to sign up for this.
Well, you've been in lockdown, anything? No.
That's the most action I've had in a while.
No, it's just through the vagina wall. So there's no cuts on your tummy or anything like that.
But what are you doing? You're just like scooping them out?
You're sucking the follicle.
Oh, you are sucking them out. That was a joke.
Yeah. It's a suck out sort of thing. Oh, okay. So you basically, You're basically sucking a follicle, which is about, you know, a couple centimetres at the time, sucking the fluid out, and then the embryologist, the scientist, will then hunt for the egg, and then they'll get it ready and then they'll vitrify it and freeze it.
Okay, so what are the costs involved? I feel like that's probably one of the biggest barriers to people that are considering freezing their eggs. I've heard all kinds of crazy, crazy figures. What are like the, obviously you can't, I'm sure everyone's different, everyone's circumstance is different, and probably everyone, every company or every clinic's different, but what are some sort of roundabout figures?
Okay, so there's two different reasons for doing egg freezing. One we touched on was the medical reasons. And in that circumstance, we can actually, it is subsidised by Medicare, but not completely. So, but the, still the costs are around about sort of $4,000-ish per cycle. Without that subsidy, it's around about here, it's about $8,000. I think the eastern suburbs states are a little bit more expensive, but it is absolutely, as you said, the biggest sort of hurdle for going for doing this in the first place.
Yes, yeah, so I think it's about 10K over here in Melbourne. That's what my digging has shown. But I guess, you know, I mean, God, I went to Coachella a few years ago, VIP, and I spent way more than 10K that weekend. So, you know, I guess you just have to sort of weigh up your priorities and see it as an investment. What are the success? What's the success rate of having your eggs taken and frozen? Like, does it take one go? Would I need a couple of goes? Like, what generally is the success rate?
It comes down to numbers and it comes down to the age and i.e. the quality of the eggs. So somebody of your age, 30, actually won't say, because do people know how old you are?
32.
Yeah, okay,
32.
I'm
about to turn 33.
If your AMH, your egg timer test showed that your egg numbers were average for your age, or obviously even better, would be even better, then we would expect to get around about sort of 12 to 15 eggs from you. And that, with each egg being around about 10%, giving us a 10% chance of a pregnancy, means that there's at least one pregnancy, most likely.
I don't like those stats, Sarah. They're not great stats.
Well, the fact is that the egg has to go through a lot to become a baby. So the egg has to fertilize, and only 70% fertilize. The egg has to, first of all, it has to thaw out. Most of the eggs thaw out, so it's not a big hurdle, but that's the first hurdle. Then they form an embryo, and then that embryo has to be a good embryo. And then it has to implant, and then it has to continue as a healthy pregnancy.
Wowee. If I wasn't feeling overwhelmed before, I definitely am now.
Oh, no, look, you shouldn't feel too overwhelmed. Basically what we're doing is we're just collecting the eggs that would normally just die off. So at every month, your ovary has a whole lot of eggs sitting on the surface of it. And there's only enough of your own follicle stimulating hormone, which is hormone from the brain, to actually stimulate your ovary. So one of them can actually grow up. So all the others are actually just lost. They just die off. So all we're doing is actually capturing those ones that would normally die off.
I think I thought in my head you'd like collect like 200 eggs, not like 12 to, you know, I thought like, oh, there'll be like a big bunch and then there'll be like a littler bunch, but that, wow. Okay.
No, 200. No, that would take a few cycles.
So once you've captured them, where are they kept? Like, are they kept, they're obviously kept cryo frozen, is that right?
So yep. One of Jess's biggest fears, we've talked about our fears before you came on the show, is that like there'll be like a like a blackout and like the fridge will die and like
and then they won't be there any longer.
So firstly, they're kept in these big vats at minus 170 degrees, so it's liquid nitrogen. So that basically is a very secure environment, obviously. We also have different backup alarms and all the rest of it here. So we've never had any problem. Repromed has been going for decades and there's never been any issue with that. But that's a very real concern. We did, you know, occasionally we have heard of labs with embryos having problems with them thawing out unnecessarily, but that hasn't happened here, and that shouldn't happen in a good lab. In terms of how long can they last, they can last indefinitely. So eggs basically, yeah, amazingly. And a child born from an egg that's been frozen for 30 years is no different from a child born from a fresh egg or from a something that's been frozen 6 months. However, ethically, the laws in Australia state that we cannot use our eggs beyond the age of a natural menopause, which is 52.
Oh, right.
Does it cost, is it like when you have a storage, you know, room down here because your parents can't keep your old stuff anymore? Like, does it cost to keep them in storage?
Yeah, it does. It costs around about, on average, $500 a year. So that's another thing to, you know, really take into consideration when you're counselling patients, whether they should go through this or not.
What about, okay, so say, for instance, I end up, you know, being very blessed and having a family naturally, but I still had all these amazing, because obviously my eggs are going to be like super performing eggs. Am I able to then donate those to somebody or give them away to somebody that maybe can't do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So egg donation is something we're doing more and more of because women are leaving things too late, often to use their own genetics. Unfortunately, you know, there aren't a lot of egg donors around because they have to essentially go through this whole IVF process. So it's not easy. It's not like the guys who donate sperm.
Guys have it so fuck. Like, why do guys get it so easy in every aspect of life?
Yeah, I like, can't answer that in this half an hour podcast.
Without a wine in your hands.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, touching on that, what percentage of women actually do end up coming back and using their frozen eggs?
So that's a really good question. Look, we've only been really doing egg freezing commercially, so non-experimentally, since 2012. Oh, wow. We haven't got the really, you know, long-term figures on that. But, you know, from my point of view, the patients that I've seen coming back, there's probably only about 20% at the moment, but obviously, you know, we're early days. A lot of patients will get pregnant naturally. So it's like any insurance, you may hope that you never need to use them, but that is usually the most likely outcome. The people that do come back tend to be still single, still very educated, and still keen to have a family. And then they will go through the donor sperm sort of pathway to get pregnant.
My mum passed away recently from early onset dementia, which is obviously can be linked to hereditary. For someone that does have a hereditary disease in their family, is it possible to ensure that the eggs I freeze don't carry those genes?
I'm sorry to hear that. I lost my mum too, and it's not fun.
No, it's not.
So there's hundreds of genetic diseases. Mm-hmm. Dementia is one of those things that is, you know, it's hard sometimes to find whether or not there is a genetic cause for that or not. There are some genes that can be picked up, but you need to be tested from that point of view. But the obvious sort of genetic diseases like Huntington's, cystic fibrosis, those sort of things, we can't actually test the eggs as such straight away, but we can quite well now test the embryos. So when an egg is fertilized and creates an embryo, then we grow up the embryo for about 5 days, and then we can actually take a cell from that embryo, get the DNA, amplify the DNA, and then basically look for those gene defects. And so the embryos that are affected, obviously we don't put back, and the ones that are normal are the ones that we'd put back. So absolutely, that's something that we do.
So you can't, but you said the dementia gene is harder to find, or?
No, there's obviously lots of different causes for dementia, but certainly if the dementia gene is one that does, you know, run.
Present itself.
Present, yeah, then you potentially could look for that. But it's a really, genetics is a really complex field. We have a full-time genetic sort of person here who deals with all of those sort of things. So you'd need to have some counselling first, and you'd need to, you know, try and hunt for if there is, hopefully there isn't, but hunt for some gene defect.
I'm keen to know, what's the difference between IVF and egg freezing, and, you know, what are the different fertility options down the track?
The process beforehand, so the workup, the actual drugs is exactly the same. The egg collection is exactly the same. IVF by name is in vitro fertilisation, so the difference starts there. So when the eggs are collected in egg freezing, we just freeze the eggs. For IVF, we fertilise the eggs with sperm and then grow them up as embryos and then either transfer an embryo around about 4 or 5 days later, or freeze the embryos. So that's the difference.
So it's the same, most of the steps, and then you get to that point and you either insert the embryo into someone right away or you put it on ice.
Absolutely. Yep.
Oh, okay. Is that what Kim Kardashian did?
Did she use a surrogate?
She's had two surrogacies, pregnancies.
Yeah, so those embryos would then be put into a surrogate.
Okay, right.
Yep. So speaking about those kind of further down the track steps, for women that might be gay or single, what is the process then in terms of finding a sperm donor to then fertilize their eggs? Like, do you have like an iPad with like kind of like a Tinder profile set up and you can like see the dudes? Like, what is that sort of next step?
Thankfully, anybody can have fertility treatment now. So that's good, first thing. In terms of getting sperm, it's pretty easy. So if you want to do things clinically, don't laugh.
I was like, you're telling me.
So basically, it depends how fussy you are. We have two sort of main sort of ways of dealing with sperm here. One is to bring your own sperm donor, so somebody that you might know but don't want to have sex with, and we would then screen them out, and if their sperm is fine, then obviously use their sperm. They'd have to have counselling with you. The second is to use our clinic recruited donors, which are anonymous donors. Now, there's not many of those around because one, guys need to, you know, tick a lot of boxes. We get fussy with their sperm.
High standards, ladies, high standards.
Yeah, keep it high. And secondly, because the law states at the moment that a child at the age of 16 can actually should be able to get in contact with their biological parent at the moment through a third party. But and a lot of guys aren't comfortable with that.
They don't want a moody 16-year-old teenage boy rocking up on their doorsteps.
Yeah, which is probably fair enough. Certainly. So we do have some local donors, but there's not a huge range to choose from. And then the more commonly sort of approach is to go to a sperm bank, which there are a number around the world. We use the California Cryobank, where it is exactly that, Tully. So you basically look up like a Tinder type thing.
Do you get photos?
You do get photos. Some only put photos of themselves as babies or young toddlers, and then the other ones that are a bit more confident can, you know, put whatever they want, but you get everything.
Wait, I have so many. Okay, wait, can you see their education? Can you see?
Oh, completely. You see their handwriting, so they write, they will give you in their own writing why they're donating. They'll provide all their education, you know, what level of education they got up to, what their professions are, what their interests are, if they've got children, you know, if they're gay or straight, everything. Obviously all the physical characteristics. And then now they all are genetically screened for as many things as we can genetically screen for at the moment. So you're actually getting a much better specimen than finding somebody naturally.
I would much rather do that than actually take my chances with old mate on Hinge. Like, what the hell? That sounds like a win-win to me.
Yeah, you can pick.
It's like an Uber Eats menu for babies.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you want to pick someone tall, dark and handsome, then it's pretty easy. If you want them to be a musician and or, you know, anything. So obviously you pay a bit more for the
premium,
guys that
premium samples.
Yeah, exactly. But it's all doable. And then their little sperms come, fly over in a frozen state, and they arrive here, and then we thaw out your eggs and we thaw the sperm, and then we just inject the sperm into the eggs and make the embryos.
Is there any other process other than like that in the lab, like artificially inseminating? Is that a thing for humans?
With a turkey baster? What are you thinking of?
Yeah, you can use a turkey baster too, Tully, but I just, that's really unscientific. Yeah, we do IUI, where we can, particularly with the overseas sperm, we thaw it out and we basically just time when we actually put that into, we actually put it through the cervix into the uterus. Mm-hmm. So that's a much sort of more slightly more natural way, I guess, of getting pregnant. The pregnancy rates aren't as good, obviously, mm-hmm. but they, you know, it's a cheaper process, and it is, as I said, it doesn't involve egg collection or anything like that.
Wow.
Oh my God. I have learned so, my mind is blown. I have learned so much. I have so much to think about. I just want to, I mean, why am I bothering on all these, you know, terrible first dates when I could just skip straight to having like an iPad menu of like delectable men to impregnate me? Like, I just don't know why I haven't thought of this before. God, I've got so much going on in my head right now. Sarah, you have been amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
You have given me a lot to think about. Guys, as always, we want to hear from you guys about your own experiences, either with fertility or egg freezing. So please feel free to email us at hello@toomuchtully.com. Have you guys ever considered freezing your eggs? Why or why haven't you done it? If you have someone who has frozen their eggs, how did that go for you? Did it work out? And as always, thank you so, so much for listening to Too Much Tully. You can find us on Instagram at Too Much Tully. You can find the podcast wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Please, please, please leave us a review and tell us what you think. Share it with your friends, share it with your family, share it with someone who's maybe thinking about freezing their eggs. And as always, I will see you next Tuesday.